This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello and welcome to Good Things, the show where we talk to good people who are doing good things. I'm Dashran Johan, and on the show with me today is Betty Yeo, one of the founding members of the All Women's Action Society, also known as AWAM. And this was back in 1985. Now, Betty has been a women's rights activist for over 40 years and is now a trainer and a facilitator for AWAM, her main focus being on combating sexual harassment at the workplace for corporate sectors, but she also trains, various other sectors as well. Welcome to the show, Betty. How are you doing? Really excited to talk to you.
Well, thank you, Ash. I'm very honored to be invited to this show.
The honor is mine, Betty. Now, Betty, let's start from the top. A lot of your journey is tied to AWAM, the organization. So take me back to the day you and a few others decided to start AWAM. What sparked the idea?
Well, I guess when we were doing this two-day event, quite a number of us were feeling that this cannot be going on all the time. And at that point of time in the 80s, if you're too young to remember, so many of the organizations, no offense, Ben, then were like dealing with cooking, sewing, flower arrangements. Mm. Of course, there may be others which I'm not aware of. But the thing is that several of us were feeling very, very sure that we need to do something to uplift the status of women. Yeah, right. Because that event that we were doing was really involving different forms of violence against women.
Right.
So we said that women cannot go on getting all this kind of violence. We need to do something to uplift their status, eradicate and prevent the violence. And basically, they need to know their rights.
Mm.
Yeah. So that's why we started to think about doing this.
Now, is this event you talk about, I've read one, it's like many people consider it like this historic violence against women workshop. It happened 31 years ago or so.
Yes.
What? Tell me about this workshop. What was so historic about it?
Well, you see, the form of violence most people know then is like wife battering. Mm. All right. Not much is known about sexual harassment. Even other forms of violence that happen, like rape or the very subtle kind of discrimination on women, like portraying them in a negative way, is not very well known to the public.
Right.
People know domestic violence as wife battering. And that's probably because WAO, Women's Aid Organization, was there in 1982. So in 85, just a year before that, we have a lot of these returnees from overseas who were student activists.
Ah.
And they have seen changes in the overseas that benefited women. And of course, it was also the decade of women in 1985, which is a global event that is bringing about changes for women. Yeah. Mm. So I must acknowledge one of the key person is Dr. Cecilia Ng. She rounded up various activists from all organizations to come together to form this event that talks about violence against women.
Right.
So that event, 23rd, 24th of March, signified a first time people spoke up on violence against women openly in the public. Mm. So that's why it's so historical. And our tagline was four different language of women. what they call was our T-shirt logo.
Right.
Yeah, it was English, Malay, Chinese, and Tamil. And the tagline is break the silence, because people do not talk about violence that happens in our community, that happens to them.
Certainly.
So that event was really broke the silence.
When did your journey in women's rights activism begin, Betty?
Wow, that's a real long journey. Well, I must say that it actually started back from home. Yeah.
Okay.
Because my mom was a person who, not the educated, highly tertiary kind of education, but she had a very good sense, and she taught all my brothers and I, we must all be equal. So can you imagine my brothers will be saying, why is sister not doing any of the housework? Yeah, that's a change already in the family that took place. We were all doing the work equally. So that kind of sparked that equality in us. Mm. Yeah. To this day, my brothers do more cooking and cleaning than I do, I must say.
That's fantastic.
Okay. And they also take responsibility for childcare and all that. So I always admire my two brothers. They are the best. And when you come back to the real activism, it really started when I joined a company that has union. But the first day was interesting. That company was picketing. Okay. So can you imagine, as I walked through the gate, people were making noise. And we were saying, what am I getting into a company that's, you know, picketing as I was walking through? But of course, they leave the newbies alone. And I was a bit fortunate to have a little better education than most of the factory level employees. So very soon, once I became confirmed, they started to rope me in into the trade union, worksite trade union. And of course, when it comes 3 years once to negotiation, a little education does go a long way. So we started to do better collective agreement for the employees, for the members. And then one thing led to another. I became an executive counselor for the trade union, the National Trade Union, Chemical Workers Union. And from there, we are all affiliated to the Malaysian Trade Union Congress, and that's a women's wing. So being the only woman executive counselor, very natural progress, I went into the women's wing. Mm-hmm. I would say that's my first taste of activism, because the chairperson of the women's wing then is Miss T. Padma, the late T. Padma, who is a very strong and vocal woman who made sure that anything that happens to women, she hits the paper. She would comment on it. So following her, I was the secretary, following her, learning from her, we really became kind of more active in supporting the women members of the MTUC. So, that's where my first taste of sexual harassment is there. Oh. We started to talk about sexual harassment to the women in the MTUC there.
What was the situation like back then in terms of women's rights? Because for a lot of people that grew up, I laughed earlier because you said I might be too young to remember. I wasn't even born in the 80s. I was only born in 93. So,
wow.
Yeah. So for a lot of us, of course, there, you know, sexual harassment and all of this is still very serious today. It still happens. Domestic violence still happens. But people are a lot more open about it these days. People talk about it a lot more. What was it back then in terms of women's rights? What was the landscape like, and what exactly were y'all fighting for?
I think you hit it on the nail when you say that people are more open now. Hmm. Yeah. In those days, the people who really spoke about it are those that has been exposed to it. Like I mentioned, people who return from overseas, who have seen the, what you call, the changes that has been made. But here in our own country, I think we face a different kind of challenge. You know, although we are living in such a rich, multicultural, multi-ethnicity, multi-religious country, these were also some of the factors that actually kept women in, so to speak, their places.
Right.
Yeah, because a lot of this traditional thinking, the culture of each of our ethnicity always says, like Chinese will be, you know, the ancient Chinese will say women must walk how many steps behind the man. And then our patriarchal society will say men must be the leaders. So indirectly, it has suppressed women to the level that they dare not voice out, even if they have the potential to do so. So that is why when we gathered together, the first thing we targeted was on violence against women, because there were so many cases of violence happening in different forms. Mm-hmm. Of course, those of us who got together were already quite actively involved in those forms of violence. For example, as I said, in the trade unions, we were already talking about sexual harassment in the workplace. Of course, we have the WAO that was dealing with this, what you call, that time it was known as wife battering.
Right.
So the shelter setup was all for the women who were battered. Yeah. And we also have the issue of rape being dealt with and the area of negative portrayal of women, where sometimes you see in advertisement how women is sitting on top of a car as though they are the ones for sale, but actually it's the car.
That's right.
Even now, racing, yeah, the Formula One, who always goes in front of all the cars is the women. Mm. So why? What has women got to do, you know, with all these things? And that's the negative form of women, yeah? So when people do not talk about it, it needs a force to motivate them to talk. And this is where the women all came together and we brought people from different sectors that are less exposed to these issues to come for and attend the workshop that was run during the 2 days.
Mm.
So overall, you find the culture of suppression, you find the culture of fear, especially of religion, and you find that people who are capable just do not want to speak up.
Right.
And those who can speak up has fear. And the environment is not very conducive. Sometimes if you make a report, then, you know, you may not get a positive response from the authorities. So a lot of work went into all these areas to come to this day where people can access help in One Stop Crisis Center or all these shelter homes, etc.
Tell me about domestic violence back in the day, because I've heard stories from you know, my parents or like my grandparents about how back in the day, let's say even if there's like the neighbors hear that a husband is beating a wife or something like that, and it's yelling and plates are being thrown and, you know, all these kinds of things, everybody will just be like, oh, that's just a personal matter. Even the cops also will come and be like, okay, just keep it down, keep it in your house, you know, don't make it, you know, public and things like that. You know, I understand that this is a personal matter. Was that true? Is that how it used to be?
Very true. Very true. Because people have always been, I mean, in general, every home is like their own palace. You don't come into my kingdom. Right. I won't disturb you. Yeah. So if anything that happens, it's always said that, oh, that's their private business. We used to have a case scenario that compares. If a person comes to your house, steals your jewelry, beats you up, or steals your things, and then takes your car and leave, what do? You make a police report.
Right.
But in domestic violence, you have a perpetrator who beats you up, who takes your things, who drives the car away, and what do? You keep quiet.
Mm.
Very seldom do they make report then. And we cannot blame these survivors because they feel so alone. They are not aware that people around them face the same issue because everyone said it's a private matter, don't deal with it. So that's why when we started AWAM, one of the first things we did was to provide service for people who were unable to speak up for themselves. We amplified their voice. For people who were facing the trauma, we provided them with counseling. And for people who do not have the legal information, we provided them legal information. But at that time in the 80s, we don't have any laws that is specific. Yeah. So we can only say, go put, make a police report. And as you rightly say, even sometimes up to today, it depends on the person in the front desk. How sensitive, how aware are they of the issue? And if you have one that is so colored in mind, they will still say, it's a private matter, go home, cook nice food. That's always a statement we get, yeah? Then you won't be beaten.
That's right.
But I am glad we are seeing changes. Yeah, we are seeing changes. So yeah, that's how it was.
And how did you back then, you and your team, you know, and the group of women you worked together with, how did y'all slowly change the perception of the masses? Because like you said, in the 80s, there was no law. And while today, you know, there's still a lot of issues, this domestic violence, you know, still issue is still going on and all of that. And there are still survivors who live in fear, understandably so, and they don't want to report and all of that. But at least now there is a domestic violence like it's a crime. Like it's everybody knows that it's a crime, and you can go to jail for mm-hmm. it. You can, you know, be tried in court for it, and all of that. How did y'all manage to make this into law?
Wow, that one took 9 years in the making. The journey is 9 years. Not as long as sexual harassment, but it was a long journey. So when we first started, from that two-day workshop, we felt the need to have a law to support all these people who undergo such experience. Yeah. So the good thing about us is we were very, very committed to the issue. We were always working together as a collective, yeah, as in a partnership. And that's why even after the two-day event, from the various organizations, years down, we still form what is known as the Joint Action Group.
Yes.
At that point, it was against violence against women because our focus was on violence against women. And one of the first things that the Joint Action Group did is to look into, to promulgate a law on domestic violence. And fortunately among us, one of the partners then was, they call themselves Federation of Women Lawyers. You can find this. Currently, they are called the All Women's Lawyers. Association of Women Lawyers.
Right.
Yeah. But at that point, it was called the Federation of Women Lawyers. And the lawyers there, I remember there's Noor Farida. Uh-huh. I think she was the head. We started to look into drafting of a legal document, a legislation. And because there were so many lived experience to share, we tried to take care of all the areas that people face violence, especially domestic violence. Of course, you will say, that's already got a penal code. You beat people, you make report under the penal code. But then we forget to see that, yes, there's a content, but the culture of the society. Mm-hmm. Do you have the culture mindset to accept what's going on? And that was why when we had this domestic violence draft, we wanted to send it through to pass in parliament. But midway, that time we don't have women's, what you call, ministry.
Oh.
We had the National Unity Ministry, if I'm not mistaken, under Dato' Napsia Omar. Hmm. And his and her deputy was the late Dato' Alex Lee.
Right.
So Dr. Alex Lee called a roundtable meeting with us to say that, look, if you want this document as a standalone act, it will not get passed because of our multi-religious community. Yeah,
right.
There was some obstruction to it. So if we are to accept what we have prepared, it may leave half the population of our sisters of that faith out of this loop. Mm-hmm. And that's not something we are prepared to do. So we said, okay, the suggestion was read it together with the penal code. So you have an act that defines the what it is domestic violence, but you read it together with the penal code. That means you draw the charges from the penal code.
Right.
And when it comes from the penal code is meant for crimes.
Mm.
Your act becomes a criminal kind of act. So it covers everybody. So that's how we are stuck with now.
Yep.
A domestic violence act that is to be read with the penal code and charges comes from the penal code.
On the show with me today is Betty Yeo, one of the founding members of AWAM, that's the All Women's Action Society. If after the break, I'll be asking her about the first sexual harassment bill that she helped draft way back to 21 years ago. We'll be back with more on Good Things, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Good Things, the show where we talk to good people who are doing good things. I'm Dashran Johan, and on the show with me today is Betty Yeo, one of the founding members of AWAM way back in 1985. So Betty, what's interesting, I'm always fascinated when I talk to, activists from, have been doing this for decades, is that, these days, if you want to organize, if you want to mobilize, you use WhatsApp groups, you go on Twitter, you can do all these things, Facebook groups and Telegram and a lot of things that are at our disposal. For example, the Lawan protest that took place recently, a lot of it was done online, the organization and all of that.
Yes.
What was it like back then? How did y'all, if y'all wanted like a group of women to come out together and to show that, you know, we are a united front, you know, and this is important to all of us. How do you organize and mobilize so many people without technology at all?
Well, we depend a lot on ourselves.
Right.
Because what we do is we actually work very hard on getting the message out.
Mm.
And one of the ways is really we print our own leaflets, we do our own campaign posters. And one of the ways is actually organizing our talks. Just like politicians have charama, we organize talk to create awareness among people. And that is a very useful spreading by word of mouth. Yeah. And we travel from north to south to west, east to west, and we bring all these cases and stories and information to everybody. Yeah. And this is how we do it. And we are very famous for organizing impromptu, you know, all get together and surround the ministers. So we know minister is at which hotel. We all go there and then our memorandum will be ready.
Yeah, wow.
This is for you. Please make sure this is changed. So it's very popular among us that we have all the people's telephones and all that is still available.
Yeah.
So you tell them, okay, this. We also have backup plans and then we still go. Yeah. And then we will hand in memorandum. So you will see in those days, we have got memorandums and memorandums. But when it comes to the high tech, yes, you reach out to the masses, but you lose that personal touch. You lose that human commitment and the feelings that cannot be expressed on the paper. Yeah.
Right.
So that's why recently, I think a few years back, Awam did this manual campaign on the to pass the sexual harassment bill, and people signed our that campaign note. Yeah, and we had 17,000, if I'm not mistaken, handed into the parliament to request that this be looked into. So that's going back to that ancient ways of how we were doing things, and then we carry out surveys. And as I said, you may not have your digital platform, but we still have your newspaper. So newspaper like Sing Chiu, like Star, used to carry out survey. And then when people, you know, it's in the newspaper, people then read newspaper, not now. So when you read these things, you see the story, you see the campaign, you hear the stories of the people. That's how we make, you know, we do postcards. And whenever we have the law that's being discussed in parliament, we write postcards to all our MPs. We have communication directly with all these people. It was a very interesting time.
Yeah, it really sounds interesting, honestly. But did y'all face a lot of resistance while doing this? You know, when y'all were organizing or when y'all were going from neighborhood to neighborhood, from plantation to plantation and estate to estate and all of that, and trying to explain to women on what their rights are, trying to get them involved as well, trying to, you know, listen to their stories, tell your stories. When all of this was going on and when y'all were pushing for this to become law, were there resistance from the state, and not just from the state, but from society as well, perhaps from men who thought, you know, their rights were being taken or their privilege were being taken away, or maybe from women themselves who, you know, internalized patriarchy because this was the world they grew up in and things like that. Did y'all face a lot of resistance?
Of course, there are such resistance, but we don't take it to the level that we become enemies of these issues. We take the approach of explaining to them. And I must say that once you do the explanation, people can understand what goes behind what we are doing. For example, I have done this kind of talks to our kampung machi. Yeah, I call it my machi training. And you try to talk to them about rice. If you go in the hard drive, like, you know, this is the coming from CEDAW or coming from UN's, the rights of the people. Hello, our aunties there will not hear about CEDAW or you the whatever laws that you're talking about. But if you tell them, you're supposed to have food on the table, who provides? You're supposed to be cared, have proper roof over your head. Who's to get that? If these are taken away, are you happy? They will tell you, no, that's my right. I need to have a roof. I need to have food. I need to have clothes. And that goes back to your right to being, to the right to live, I mean, to have house, to have food, basic rights. So when they understand these are your basic rights, then when you talk to them, can you be beaten? Are you allowing yourself to be beaten? They say, no one can beat me. I didn't tell them. They tell us. And they'll tell you stories of how they are being left behind. So they are not ibu tunggal, they are ibu tinggal.
Right.
They are left behind. So they experience issues such as this. They can see for themselves. And the good man that is supporting them, they don't retaliate. They know that these are part of their responsibility. They know that it should be provided. So if they know their rights, if they know the value of life, they are supportive. Unless they are thinking differently or acts differently, that's when the protest comes in. Yeah. So we do have different kinds of reaction. But the thing is, when we explain, and if people are rational, people can accept. So good luck to all the good people.
When it comes to women's rights in Malaysia, you've been doing this for 40 plus years. What are some of the biggest changes you've seen compared to before? And what are, perhaps more interestingly, things that you thought would have changed by now, but still have not?
Well, we thought we would have a sexual harassment bill by now.
Right.
Mm-hmm. 21 years down the road, we are still fighting.
Yeah.
And what we thought we will have as equality among people, although in writing, one of the significant achievement actually was the inclusion of gender as one that should not be discriminated within our constitution is a milestone. Yeah, having it in our mother of all law means that everyone should respect it. Yeah, irrespective of who you are, it's already stated in the constitution, you need to respect that you do not discriminate based on gender. And gender here doesn't mean female. Gender means any form of sex that you choose to believe yourself to be, yeah, that you're born in. So by right, there shouldn't be discrimination currently in our society. But you can see for ourselves that there's still discrimination, there's still violence, and violence is partly due to the imbalance of power.
Right.
Yeah. And people discriminate when they are in power. So while I'm not saying women do not discriminate, women do not abuse their power, but the majority that is doing it are the men.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Due to their, what, like you said, the whole societal education of this patriarchal concept has made them into what they are, you know. And there is a very interesting, what you call, concept of the 7P.
Okay.
Which is, men believe there's this 7P, the three key ones mean power, patriarchal thinking, as well, power, and one more is, oh dear, I didn't prepare to say this, so I forgot. So anyway, it is how men were behaving because of their own upbringing as well.
Right.
Yeah. So if you come from a society that always teaches you that men shouldn't cry, men must be this, men must be that, they will learn to be that. And therefore, we need to do a lot of rethinking, because this idea of the 7Ps came from Dr. Michael Kaufman. And in our WAM, we actually had people trained to understand what's the 7P, men especially, and they help to educate other men on how to stop violence against women. Because while women are the major victim or survivor, it's normally the men who perpetrates it. So we need to change that thinking among the men. Yeah. So that's why this concept was being shared with people. And we have a lot of male allies who help us. Today is November 26th. Mm-hmm. November 25th, the day against violence against women, that's the day we do activities. We used to have runs. We used to have, what do you call this, marathon or jogathon, treasure hunt.
Wow.
To gather people around. And during the run or the treasure hunt, we put in little information. We put all this information in our souvenir program and we run the quiz. So people must read it in order to win the quiz. So that's how we also spread the message. Yeah. So that's how we have been doing it in those days. Now, don't dare run. We all end up in jail.
Well, I've actually just pulled up the 7 P's here.
Great.
It's patriarchal power, sense of entitlement to privilege.
Yes, and privilege, then, that's the one.
Permission, I'm not sure what that is.
Permission is like, for instance, like just now you say, your neighbor, the perpetrator is beating up the survivor and then nobody takes action.
Oh.
By not taking action, you are giving permission for that person to carry on.
Right, okay.
Yeah, so that's the permission of the society.
So there's also paradox of men's power, the psychic armor of manhood.
Must be strong, cannot cry.
Masculinity as psychic pressure cooker.
Yeah.
And
cannot
past
cry
yes. And the,
past experience is very important.
Hmm.
For instance, in cases of domestic violence, the young children who observe what's happening in their family, how the parents are fighting or how one party of the parent is abusing the other, the children sees, the children learn. So these are past experience. So a boy may learn to become aggressive like the father.
That's right.
Girl may become submissive like the mother. And that's where it perpetrates another cycle of violence when they grow up.
Mm.
Yeah. So that's the past experience.
Right. What are some of the, perhaps this, like what is your proudest moment in activism so far?
My then proudest moment, was when they said in the Employment Act, they're going to include sexual harassment. I said, then my job is done. I don't have to fight for this sexual harassment. That was in 2012. Then Manatau, when it came to 2017 and towards the end, we were requested, can we review that ancient document that we submitted in 2001 to update it to the current scenario or situation. So there goes the second round of our, anti-sexual harassment bill. So now I guess I will have to wait until the bill is passed in parliament, then I can rest.
Okay, let's talk about that. Before we talk about why it's not getting passed, you were one of the individuals with your team and your comrades that, drafted the first sexual harassment bill many, many years ago. It's been, 21 years now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about drafting the first sexual harassment bill. How did that get off the ground?
Okay. Well, it came after the Domestic Violence Act was passed.
Mm.
Then we started to work on it. And credit must go to this person, Zarizana.
Okay.
Zarizana is a lawyer by profession, and she was then, I think, the chairperson of the Women Crisis Center. At that time, the Penang organization was called Women Crisis Center, but now the name is changed to Women Center for Change. Yeah. So she in Penang, we in KL, Awam, and what Awam and Empower, the Women's Development Collective. So what started as a draft by all of us, drafted by Zarizana, needs to be fine-tuned.
Right.
So it left myself and another colleague of mine, Siu Ching. We had to do this, and last time got no email that we can just so easily, I make changes, it's now in the drive, you go and make a look at it. Last time we literally took a drive, okay?
Oh, wow.
And it wasn't a car drive, it was a bus drive, all right?
Oh, okay.
So Siu Ching and I will be on the bus to Penang, where Zari Zana is. And we will be looking at the draft. And that's where I always remember I learned the term vicarious liability. Yeah. So this is how, because Siu Ching is a lawyer by background. Okay. She has legal background. Yeah. Mm. So as we go through, she will explain terms. And when I ask, what is this? She will explain. So we did all this on the way to Penang. And bus ride is not so short, like 1 hour, it's like five hours at least, yeah? So we can learn a lot of things in that five-hour class. So when we reach there, we work with Zari Zana. We bunk in with her in her house. And that's how, because NGO got no money. We have to save every cent. You can't just fly there. You just take a bus, go there, do all this, and then take a bus home. So these are the interesting, memorable things that till now you don't forget about it. Mm-hmm. Okay. And one thing about the joint action group is, even though we do things by a certain organization, every organization has input. So whoever who are partners in the joint action group then gave our input, our thoughts, everything, and then the few of us would streamline it properly. So that was the initial one. So after handing it in 2002, we had another roundtable meeting where a lot of overseas countries' representative came. Some of them already have the Sexual Harassment Act in their own countries. So we input further into this bill of ours. But of course, sitting between the Ministry of Human Resource and Ministry of Women, it goes ding dong until it lapsed 20 years, almost 20 years, about 18 or 19 years. Then we get to say, redraft it. So then, of course, it fell back on our seat to look at how to redraft it. And at that point of time, we have a young group of women. They are called the Young Women Making Change, their group, also trying to make changes, bringing about a law on sexual harassment. So we invited them together and we all worked together, including the lawyers from the AWL, because lay person like me, I can only give some input from the past till now. And then these young lawyers, they now with the computer can do, you know, research everywhere. And with their own legal background, contributed much to the current draft that we did. Mm-hmm. But then it's another story what we want and what we are going to receive. We will have to see when the law is passed.
So why do you think there's so much resistance to the sexual harassment bill? Because this is even more, I mean, if you just look at gauge timeline as a sort of gauge of resistance, this is taking even longer than the Domestic Violence Act, which y'all worked on for 9 years. This is 21 years in the making. And if you ask a lot of people just on the street, I don't know, maybe I'm living in a bubble. You can correct me if I'm wrong. A lot of people will be like, of course, sexual harassment is wrong. Just generally, when you explain to them what it is. So it seems like a very common sense sort of law. Why is it so difficult to get these sorts of common sense laws passed? What's the resistance?
Well, on the surface, the most resistant group of people towards the act we can see is the Malaysian Employers Federation. They have their concerns. They are afraid that we don't know what they are afraid of. But that's one of it. Another area, this is my own opinion, it could be that our culture in our society is so used to having women being submissive, you know, and it's almost became a culture to them, to some people, to tease women, to make sexist comments. You know, this rape culture happens in our society. They make a joke of rape. They talk about things in a sexist manner, like poor Ayn. So all this is something that will be taken away, and that's their fear. Mm-hmm. All this norm that they are so used to is going to be changed. Yeah, but of course, day to day, if these things happen, you can still like tahan. I can't put it in English, but tahan it a bit. But if this happens in the workplace, how is it going to impact on people? It has tremendous mental, affects your mental, affects your physical, and affects the remuneration that you earn if you don't go and do your job. Yeah. So actually, internationally, countries, companies are all changing. They're accepting the international convention and 190 under the ILO, International Labour Organization, which places a lot of effort and concern on how an organization is run, how they must provide certain good governance to make sure that they address the issue of sexual harassment at the workplace. What is the root cause? What can you put in place to support those who need to make a report on cases? These people shouldn't face retaliation. You know, you need to have policies. You need to have reporting mechanism. You need to have support for the people who face sexual harassment, counseling, etc. So when you do not accept that responsibility as a provider of work, you are already preventing all these benefits or all these rights to your workers. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that is why we say that it is not something new. And if people are worried that, oh, if a company is known to have sexual harassment, it will be bad if you do not take an effort to clamp the sexual harassment. Exactly. But if your organization does all the preventive work, do all the policies, do all the things that you need to do, people will make you and say, oh, you're such a good company. You're doing fantastic job. So I don't see why companies are afraid of sexual harassment law being passed. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It would be so good if they just embrace it, yeah, and show them that we are such good employers. And once the law is there, people will follow, hopefully. Yeah, mm-hmm, hopefully. These are some of the things which people should think about, you see.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, like, companies should worry more about providing a safe environment for their employees rather than trying to protect, you know, perpetrators and worried that, oh, with these laws, then people will find out and all, you know. Yeah. What kind of culture are we creating, right, as a society? And what kind of culture are we not trying to change?
As employer, it is their duty to provide safe environment.
Yes.
And that's why we have the OSHA, the Occupational, mm-hmm, Safety and Health Act. But people miss looking at sexual harassment in connection to health and safety of the employee. It is definitely a health issue, you know, because the employee who faces the harassment, they get so stressed out, they have anxiety, and all this can develop into physical manifestation of all this. When you get angry, your liver or your heart burns and all this. So from mental, it develops into physical. So it's a very real health and safety issue that we need to look into. But still, that's not happening.
Yeah, we keep pushing, hopefully sooner rather than later. They keep saying we're going to do it in this parliamentary sitting, that next sitting. So hopefully. Now, Betty, you've been part of AWAM for very long. You're still part of AWAM. What has kept you going for so many years? And how important has been this journey to your life, to your growth?
I guess the journey has been tremendous and fantastic. Mm. It literally has enlightened me. It's almost like my university. Uh-huh. You know, I go in as a novice, and by the time I reach now, it has given me so much knowledge and skills. And we share this kind of learning together. And the group itself is not just AWAM, but the Joint Action Group is also a very committed group towards the issue of women. In fact, this Saturday onwards, 27th to 29th, we are having what is known as Women's Tribunal. Yes. So this is another fantastic thing, which is all on Zoom. So here again, we are highlighting issues that has been experienced by some of our people who has not managed to make it into the mainstream justice. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So here is the opportunity for people to hear what are the constraints of each individual in the experience of violence or violation of rights. So do tune in, do join us, and listen to what the women in this part of the world is experiencing. So you, if you say you need to stop, the work is not done. But if you say you feel tired, you can always take a gap year and then come back ever stronger, mm-hmm. refresh. And the experience that we have, we can always share. It's up to individuals to take up what we are sharing. Take what is good, leave what is not good. That's always open to everyone. But what's important is we need to be supportive and in solidarity of the issue that's facing all of us. Because what affects a woman doesn't just affect her alone. It affects the whole community around her, especially her family. So if people are thinking that, oh, this is a woman's issue, think again. Because it will, the ripples will impact the children, the family, and society at large. So that's where society have to work together as well.
Certainly. As we wrap this conversation up, Betty, would you have a final message for us?
Well, I look forward to see our country heading towards no discrimination and gender equal. Mm-hmm. At the same time, no violence against, you know, anybody. I think the violence is not just physical, it's also mental, mm-hmm. sexual. And if we can do that, I think we will make peace with a lot of people.
Certainly. Here's to achieving a gender equal society. On that note, thank you so much for joining me today, Betty.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
That was Betty Yeo, one of the founding members of AWAM, and that was way back in 1985. If you missed any part of the conversation, you can check out the podcast on the BFM app, bfm.my, or pretty much wherever you get your podcasts from. I'm Dashran Johan, and this has been Good Things, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.